Well, it's good to see you guys. Y'all doing all right today? It's another great Sunday. I'm glad that y'all are here. It's really the wrap-up of Soul 30, and man, it has been impactful for me. I don't know about you guys, but you know, we took the 30 days, and really we did 30 days, and many of you came, 30 days of even prayer in the morning at 6 a.m. And it's amazing how when you take a season of time and you focus on what God wants to do in you, and you are willing to let him do it, he does it. And I know that for me personally, and I can certainly speak for my wife and I, God's shown up in our life in the last 30 days more than he has in a really long time. But I also think that's because we've walked through more junk in the last 30 days than we have probably ever. And so I'm excited about what the future holds because I know who holds the future. And we're wrapping up this series on, you know, it's 30 days to a cleaner you. Well, the only way that we're ever truly going to get clean is if we allow God to clean us. I don't know if you have small kids. You got small kids and you let them clean themselves. How does that work out? I remember when Lisa and I just moved to Lake Charles, my oldest son was, oh gosh, he was like three or four at the time, and he was just a little kid, and he was even younger than that. And they were playing in the room, and it got really, really quiet. And when you have small children, let me tell you right now, you got a three-year-old, and they're quiet in their room, there's a problem. There's a major problem. So we walked back there, like, you notice it's been kind of quiet. Let's go check on him. Somehow, my oldest son, my three-year-old, got a tub of Crisco from under the cabinet and grabbed the Crisco and, like, slathered himself, slathered his brother, and slathered carpet. And we learned a few things, that if I'd have let my three-year-old try and clean himself, there's no way he'd have got it clean. And the next thing that I learned, you can't get Crisco out of brand-new carpet. It just doesn't happen. And the reality is that when we try to clean ourselves, we never really do a great job. We need to allow God to clean us. That is the point of this whole series. And we've said over and over this, that we're not a body with a soul. We are a soul with a body. And I want you to understand, and if you were here last week and heard my pastor speak, he talked about who we truly are, because at our essence, we are just like, we're created in God's image, and we're three parts. We're body, we're soul, and we're spirit. And so we are spirit. Everybody say, I am spirit. We have a soul. Say, I have a soul. Come on, y'all can do better. I have a soul. That's your mind, your will, your emotions. Now, in essence, we are spirit. We're created. That's the image of God we're created in. But we have a soul. That's our mind, that's our will, our emotions. But we live in a body. Everybody say, I live in a body. And this week, we're talking about the seduced soul, the seduced soul. And like, here's the reality, that we can be tempted away to something that looks good but is not good, and it can mess us up. Have you ever been tempted by something that looks good, seems like it's going to be good, but when you get it, it's no good and it messes you up? Can I tell y'all a quick story about my honeymoon? That sounds bad. I get that. But you gonna listen? Y'all want to hear the story? I did not tell my wife that. I just put it in this morning. Is that okay? We went to Mexico, to Cozumel. So I came from a family of divers. I got my open water when I was 12 years old, but I'd been diving. I don't remember not scuba diving. My dad was an instructor. I got my dive master at 18, my instructor at 21. And so I got married at 22. Well, my family had been going to Cozumel for years, taking people diving. And so we went to Cozumel on our honeymoon, but I'd recounted a few years before, I'd gone with my family when I was probably 15 or 16 years old, so it had been a while, and I told her the story about how I ate some baby octopus legs, and it had the suction cups on the octopus leg, and when I ate it, all the suction cups came off in my mouth and then stuck to the inside of my mouth. I'm like, and it just, for some reason, it totally grossed her out, and I couldn't even tell the story. She'd get upset because it was so disgusting to her. So we are on our honeymoon. We're in an all-inclusive resort, and we're eating, and I noticed that in my plate of whatever it was, some sort of ceviche, there was those octopus leg just like that. Except it was a little bit bigger. And so I stuck it, and I thought to myself, because I was 22 and totally stupid, I thought it would be funny to unknowingly feed my wife the very thing that she found disgusting, that I told her that story. And so I said, hey, baby, look, I've got a Mexican noodle. I lied. I was like, you should try it. I don't know what I was thinking. And so it looked like it's white, you know, it's cooked. I'm like, it's a Mexican noodle. Go ahead and try it. It's really good. And she loves pasta. So she's like, oh yeah, I'll try it. And she bit into it. And if you've never had octopus, it's a little chewy. And this octopus was doing the same thing that the octopus years before did. As soon as you bit it, it's like all of the suction cups detached and they got into the inside of your mouth. And so she put it in her mouth and bit down in those suction cups and she totally, I will never forget what that was like ever in my whole life. I saw this look of absolute horror on her face directed at no one. Just like, oh, like, I can't believe this is what it is. And she really like, could see the recognition of what it was in like a split second. And then she looked at me with this look that was like exorcist. Like, I'm going to kill you. But she's a very calm person. And so she sets down her fork, she sets down her knife, she takes her napkin, she puts it on the table of the restaurant, and she gets up and she walks away. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible moment for me. My honeymoon was not what I thought it would be from that moment on. It was pretty wild. What's my point? Here's my point. I was the devil in that story. That's my point. Y'all are a tough crowd. I was the devil because you know what I did? I lied. I deceived. I seduced her into taking something that she thought was one thing, but in reality was another. You know, when I said the seduced soul, many of you probably went straight to the gutter with that. You're thinking, oh, I know what he's talking about today. I don't even need to be here. But I'm just saying that you probably do. Because the tactic of the enemy from the beginning of time is to seduce us into giving our heart and soul to something that has no good consequence for us. In fact, it has very damning consequences. Mark 8:36 says, what does it benefit you if you gain the whole world but you lose your own soul? And my heart for you is that your mind, your will, your emotions, it's set on God because you've been spiritually born again and every day spiritually you're in his presence and you're being renewed day by day. And because of that, your body follows suit. Exodus 20, 3 through 4 says this, and this is where we're starting today's message because what we're really talking about is not seduction as the world may think of it, but the seduction, the lie of the enemy that gets us to violate God's purpose and plan for our lives. Exodus chapter 20 says this, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. We're talking about idols this morning because the tactic and the plan of the enemy is to get you to put something on the throne of your life that is not God. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 16 through 19, we see what God speaks and he says, so do not corrupt yourselves by making an idol in any form, whether a man or a woman, an animal on the ground, a bird in the sky, a small animal that scurries on the ground, or a fish in the deepest sea. And when you look up into the sky and see the sun, the moons, and the stars, and all the forces of heaven, don't be seduced into worshiping them. The Lord your God gave them to all the peoples of the earth. Let me just say this, that we think that like, man, there's I'm not like, worship like a chicken? What is this? It's like, this is like some foreign country out in the middle of nowhere. They don't even have electricity and internet. They're walking around with wooden shoes. Who knows? Like, what? Nobody does that. Like, nobody has idols anymore. That's crazy and insane. Like, why would I make an idol? Let's go back to verse 16. An idol in the form of a man or a woman. I wonder here if any of you ladies have ever made a man an idol before you really got to know him, because then you're ready to kick him out after a while. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Y'all are a tough room. An animal on the ground. I'm stupid. I ain't gonna worship no cow. What you think? You think I'm a Hindu? No. I don't. A bird in the sky. An animal that scurries along the ground. Yeah, that's it. I worship the god of squirrels. And come on. A fish in the deepest sea. Yeah, like I'm gonna worship a fish. I don't know, does your truck have Salt Life on the back of it? Come on now. Do you see my point? Because the reality is where it says, can we go to verse 19? Where it says, don't be seduced into worshiping them. And we go, well, that's ridiculous. I'd never worship anything. Oh, really? I'm going to give you a definition of worship. Now, I'm just going to be transparent. I totally made it up, but it's scriptural. It really is. Here is the definition for worship. Giving your heart to an object of your devotion and attention. Giving your heart to an object of your devotion and attention. So here's my question. What do you give your heart to? What do you give your heart to? What is it? I mean, for some people, it actually may be the salt life, that they're so obsessed with going offshore or going out to the jetties or going hit the trout or the redfish, that's all that consumes them. It is the object of their attention, their affection, their desire. What is the object of your attention, your affection, your desire? What is it? And really, my heart today is that you take this message, because like, I'll just be honest, I just going through this morning, it's going, man, it can be easy to take it lightly, but I pray that you really seek God and say, Lord, is there anything that is on the throne of my heart that comes before you? How do we dethrone those things that maybe there is something on the throne of your heart? Listen, for me, that I was a hobby junkie, and so I was looking for fulfillment. I was looking for something to fulfill me in a lot of things. Like I couldn't go, there was a whole season of my life that I was so obsessed with dirt bikes and motocross and enduro that it would keep me up at night, and at night my heart and mind was set on how I could make my bike faster. What if I did this suspension? What if I dropped to a 13 tooth or a 12 tooth on the countershaft sprocket? I put a 42 tooth in the rear for this track, and I could set my suspensions here. And it was just craziness. And I was obsessed. And what I didn't realize, even though I'd given my life to the Lord years before, there was something that had seduced my soul away from God, and my focus was no longer on him as the number one thing in my life, but he was there, but maybe he was number two or three. Maybe that's you. Maybe it is a relationship. Maybe it is a person. Is there anything that is on the throne of your heart that comes before God? And if there is, you need to dethrone that. Because not because there's anything innately wrong with fishing or hunting or shopping or dirt bikes. There's nothing innately wrong with that, but whatever you put before God will keep you from fulfilling your purpose that he has for you on this earth. If there's anything that you place before him, anything, it will keep you from reaching your purpose. And when you're not reaching your purpose, you're living with a void in your life. When you're not actively, listen to me, when you're not actively walking out, reaching that purpose, walking in that purpose, there will always be a longing and a void in your life. This is the seduction of the enemy, and he uses lies. So how do we dethrone the idols of our soul? Number one, we have to identify the idols of our soul. Psalms 24, 3 and 4 says, "Who may ascend to the hill of the Lord? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to an idol or swear by what is false." And we all want clean hands. Lord, I don't want to do anything that's terrible to you. And we can just list the things that people do. That this clean hands is really a picture of everything that you would touch and everything that you would do. In fact, in Psalms, for the Jewish person, clean hands are huge. In fact, everywhere they go, if you go to Israel, even today, everywhere that you're going to go where there's a Jewish population, which is the vast majority of Israel, they have these two-handled cups, because everywhere they go, they're constantly washing both their hands twice. And they're making sure that they're grabbing the handles with clean hands even. So there's this whole thing about cleanliness and even modern Judaism and in ancient Judaism about what you touch can defile you. So here's my question. Is there anything that defiles you? And you may say, no, there's nothing that I'm actually doing that defiles me. But then it's more than just what you're doing. It's the heart behind what you're doing. What is your heart set on? Because here's the thing. You could be the perfect model Christian. People can look at you and go, That's the man. That's the woman. That's what you need to be. That is a Proverbs 31 woman of God. That is a man of God right there. And you can look by all outward appearances that you got everything going on. But this addresses the heart. Do you know what's in your heart. Jeremiah says, the heart of man is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Let me tell you who can. God can. And if you will seek him, if you will knock on the door of heaven, you may have to knock for a month, but let me just tell you right now, he will answer you. And if you let him, he'll clean all the junk out. He'll show up and he'll clean up your heart and your soul. Really, this message, and can I just say that really this next season of what God is calling us to is one simple thing. Holiness. Holiness. So often, people think of holiness as something that it's really not. They're like, oh my gosh, holiness is all about like getting rid of all sin. Can I just say that's actually not the definition of what holy is. Holy means that there's something or someone that is set apart for God's work. And if you look in through the Old Testament, particularly through the book of Leviticus, and we see how so many things were dedicated and consecrated to God, they were set apart as holy. That means that they were used for his work and there could be nothing dirty on them. Holiness is me saying, God, I am set apart for your work. The byproduct, we don't walk in sin. The identifier that I'm not living a holy life, a life set apart so that God can do work in me and through me, is that I embrace areas of sin in my life. Let me just tell you, I'd have been totally shocked in Mexico if I'd have put that noodle in my wife's mouth and like, here you go, I fed it to her. I was the one who fed it to her, reached across the table and said, it's a Mexican noodle. And if she'd have bit down like, this is the best thing in the world. Let me tell you, this is how the enemy operates. I know, I'm the devil in that story because he lies to you. Look at this, isn't this great? Isn't this wonderful? Why don't you just try it? And then you take a bite. Many times that first bite, you're like, what is this? And he keeps lying. I tried with my wife. Oh, it's good, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it? No, it's not. And yet we still keep eating it. Have you ever been there? It's a miserable place. We have to identify the idol of our souls. How do we do that? How do we know if you're idolizing something? I've got three simple questions that you can ask. Here's the first one. How do you spend your time? How do you spend your time? There's two aspects of time. There's quantity time and there's quality time. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm missing it on this one because like I don't spend that much time on God. Can I just tell you, I'm not saying that every moment of every day that you have to have a Bible in your hand, worship music on, and you closing your eyes praying. But that there should be a heart behind your life, that your life as a whole is devoted. So the fact of the matter is that quantity doesn't necessarily equal quality. So Jared, our guitar player right here, he's actually our music director, his wife's the worship leader, and Jared, he's an amazing guitarist, he's a great musician, but he's a conductor on the trains for his job. That's what he does for a living. And so as much as I want him to be a man, and he is, a man just loves the Lord with all of his heart. When he's on the train, guess what I want him doing? I want him to drive the train. I want him to be the guy that's like, not like, got his eyes closed and like hitting the accelerator and like, thank you, Jesus. His eyes closed, worshiping. I got my Bible here. Okay, that's not being devoted to God. That's being stupid. And you may have a job that is intense, that requires your full attention while you're there. And it may take 8 to 10 hours a day where you don't have the luxury of like, I don't have the luxury of putting him in worship music. I can't do it at my job. And like, it is so intense. I've got to give 100% in that time. Let me just tell you, God's with you in that. So you may spend 10 hours at work, but my question is there a time that is priority in your life? Because that's the quality that matters. And here's the it is really the value that you place. Is your time with God an afterthought, simply an hour on Sundays? Or is your time with God the number one most important thing in your life? How do you spend your time? I'm not writing this condemningly. I'm writing this from the place of conviction because in the last 30 days that we've been in Soul 30, God's done a big rocking of my soul. How do you spend your time? The next thing, how do you spend your money? Show me your checkbook, I'll show you your priorities. I don't like Walmart at all. I can just say this truthfully. I hate Walmart. I just don't like going. There's not a single thing about it that I like. I don't even like the prices, because you go there and like I got four kids. The oldest is 15. The youngest is 8 years old, and they eat a lot. So I know if you go into Walmart, like to shop for the family, like it's like grocery buy-in time with four kids. Let me tell you, you're not getting out there for under $400. You're just not. Am I wrong? Is it not crazy that groceries are so expensive? And how about gasoline? I mean, if you got a budget gasoline, because gas isn't, I remember when gas was 98 cents a gallon when we got married. There was a little period that dipped. Now that was 21 years ago, but it was 98 cents. I'm officially old. I'm complaining about the price of gas comparing it to 20 years ago. Is gas expensive?
Yes.
Do you buy it? Man, don't you just love it when you get to whip out the old pen or the app now, and you get to make your check out to your landlord or your mortgage company? Oh man, I love it. It's so much fun. I love to write that check. Oh, this is the best thing ever. Oh, how much is that? Oh, come on. That's four digits. That's great. Nobody does that. But you pay it every month. Why? Because everybody puts a priority on where they live. So we write it. We may not like it. If you like writing checks to a landlord, I don't know what's the matter with you, but you do it. Why? Because it's a priority. Gasoline, you do it. Why? Because it's a priority. Food, because it's a priority. Here's my question. What's your priority when it comes to the kingdom of God? What, is there anything? This I know. I got out of motocross when I was in college because I was riding since I was a kid, because I thought drag racing would be cheaper. So I got into drag racing. I learned really quick. I thought the bills for motocross that I was happy to pay until I wasn't happy to pay them were really insane and crazy, until I switched into the world of drag racing, which I'd grown up around, and bought a 1975 Chevy Monza with a 427. I could pull the front tires. It was a 12 flat with nothing in it but a cam and some ignition. It was a sweet little car, but it cost a ton to take that thing out to the track. It was a lot of money. And it's amazing how I was happy to write that first check. After a while, I realized I'd been seduced. Am I making sense here, guys? The last thing, what do you think and talk about? What do you think and talk about? What comes out of your mouth? Do you know what the idol of your soul is? What is it? I've just mentioned hobbies and fun things and things that on the front side seem like they're really good, but they can end up being bad. This is what the Lord gave me, though, is that there's also some things that are no good that we give our hearts to if we're not careful. They take our attention, our devotion, and in some perverted way, we get so seduced, they even have some sort of weird, comfortable affection that we have for them. Addiction, depression, fear. And yet here's the second thing. We're called to tear down those idols. We're called to tear down those idols. Mark 10:21, Jesus looks at this young ruler who comes to him asking about eternal life, and says Jesus looked at him and he loved him. He's a very, very wealthy young man who had said, I've kept all of the commandments. He had clean hands. I've done everything I was supposed to do. I am the epitome of what a young man who is walking with God should look like. And Jesus says this, because he loved him, he says, but there's this one thing that you lack. Go and sell everything you have and give it to the poor. This is a wealthy young man. Give everything and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. What is Jesus saying? That we're all called to sell everything that we have and give it all to the poor and follow him? I think that the emphasis in this was because he loved him, he put his finger on that one thing that he lacked. What's that one thing? What's that one thing that you've put on the throne of your heart? In Judges chapter 6, we see the story of Gideon, this young man who was living in Israel at a time. This is ancient Israel before Jesus was there. he's living in Israel, the land of promise, and he's living in the middle of oppression. The nation for 7 years has turned its heart away from God. It's given its heart to the God, the two gods, primary gods, Baal and Asherah. One is a violent, horrible god, Baal, that people served him and were devoted to him out of fear, and the other was a god of sexuality. Israel for 7 years has been oppressed by the Midianites because they've given their heart, not to the God who delivered them from slavery, but to this God of the land in which they were living, an old God that was wicked and terrible. And because of that, those 7 years have been oppressed. At harvest time every year, the Midianites would come in and take all of the livestock and all of the grain, and Israel was literally starving to death. They barely were able to hide enough grain to be able to eat themselves, just enough to survive. And so Gideon is hiding from the Midianites, and he's in a wine press, and he's threshing grain when all of a sudden God shows up. This angel of the Lord shows up and says, "Gideon, you're a mighty man, and I'm going to use you to deliver the entire nation of Israel from the enemy." And Gideon freaks out and says, he argues that you got the wrong guy. There's no way that I can do this. And the angel says, "Oh yes, you can." And Gideon says, "Well, can I make you a meal? Can I bring something to give to you?" And the angel says, "Sure." Gideon makes a full meal. He comes back. He puts it on a rock before this angel. And as soon as he puts it on this rock, this angel steps up and the rock flames jump out and this fire consumes everything that Gideon made. He had made like soup and some meat and some bread, and it consumes it all. And Gideon freaks out and he says, "Oh my gosh, I've just witnessed a miracle. You must be God. I'm going to die." And in verse 23, this is what the angel says to him. It's the Lord at this point says, "It's all right," the Lord replied. "Don't be afraid. You will not die." And this is what the Lord gave me. Many people bow down to the things that they fear and hate. They bow down. And I'm telling you, God today is saying, don't be afraid. The things that you fear are not going to kill you if you trust God. And then in verse 25, the Lord tells Gideon to take action. And he says this, the Lord said to him, "Tear down your father's altar and cut down the Asherah pole beside it." My wife asked to share this morning just something that we've been walking through, and knowing that in spite of the areas where the enemy comes in and tries to seduce us with fear and doubt and depression, God's bigger than that. Why don't you give a hand to my wife?
Good morning. I'm not one that's been one to share a whole lot, so I said a lot last time, and he told me not to say it, so I will do my best. I did it again. Oh, well. Okay. I want to start.
Go ahead, you're fine. You're good.
But I want to share what God's been doing in me, and I want to share with you just a little backstory from a little over a year ago, what's been happening with me personally. Last July 5th, we had a youth camp here. It was the first night. It was on spiritual warfare. And after the pastor spoke and the worship was done, we, you know, had an altar call for all the girls to come forward, or boys, whoever they were. I happened to be praying for girls. I was standing right here in front of the church. I prayed for one little girl. And then I started to pray for the second little girl, and I kind of felt, just for an instant, I felt funny. And I happened to look this way, and I saw this hand, and it was moving like on its own. And in a split second, I was like, what in the world? And then that was kind of it. And then I woke up, I was in an ambulance, and right outside the doors, and a lady was pulling on my finger, trying to poke me with a needle. And that's all I knew. And I looked at her and I was like, what are you doing? Except I did.
You didn't say that.
I did. I did. I said, H-E-L-L. It isn't, it is in the Bible. I said, what are you doing? because I was scared. I was wrestling with her
because she's like, oh, "How are you doing?" Like, yeah, that's what it yeah. was. Sorry. So, yeah.
But what had happened? I'm going to fast forward. What had happened is when I was starting to pray for the second girl, I dropped and had a grand mal seizure right here at the front in the church. So I went to the hospital. They checked everything out. I had scans, did blood work. Everything was fine. I went to see a doctor. He wanted me to take medicine, and I was like, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm just going to trust God that it wasn't the enemy. I'm not going to take medicine. We're all good. And so in March of this year, I had another seizure. It was about 9 months later. I was up with my family. We were in the TV room. We were watching TV, which we rarely do, but it was a family night, so we were watching, and I had another grand mal seizure. And then in the past 6 weeks, I still wouldn't take medicine. In the past 6 weeks, I've had three more grand mal seizures. Tuesday of this past week was the fifth one that I had, and it was the worst one. Like my children, my oldest son, who is 15, have been there for four of them. He saw the first one, he saw the last, and he said, Mom, this last one was the worst. He said, you weren't breathing for the first 30 seconds. I had to roll you on your side, had to open your mouth. Todd was here at the church about to do a Bible study. And so my four beautiful babies witnessed this. But the night before Tuesday night, so which was Monday night, of course, I could not go to sleep that night. And I lay down to go to sleep and I closed my eyes. And when I closed my eyes, I pictured this. I pictured myself with a microphone speaking to a crowd of people. And I closed my eyes and I was speaking and I was like, okay, that's good. And I feel like this is a God message. And so I'd lean over the bed, I'd grab my phone and I'd take notes on what I heard myself saying when I'd close my eyes. And so that's what I want to share with you, because I truly believe it was a God message for me, because he was aware of what was going to happen just 6 hours later. He knew it was going to happen. And so I want to share with you that message. But I do want Todd to share with you who Pastor Jim is.
Sure. So she references Pastor Jim in here. Pastor Jim is my pastor's pastor. He's also very gifted with a spiritual gift, the prophetic spiritual gift. He prays for people, and it's like he's reading their mail. It's not weird. It's not televangelist thing. It's actually scriptural and biblical. And he'll just pray for people, sipping usually on like a Route 44 like he does their sweet tea from Sonic, and he'll sip on that and he'll just pray for somebody and they'll start crying because he's talking about stuff that nobody else knows. And in fact, we had our teams meeting about 7 weeks ago where we had teams and he prayed over people and it was pretty spectacular. And so Pastor Jim spent time with us and he didn't know really anything that was going on. We told him about the seizures and can I just say that it can be very, when you're faced with something that you have no answers to, it can be very scary. And so, go ahead, babe.
Okay. So, this is what I leaned over and wrote that night till about 1 o'clock in the morning, last Monday night. So this is what I wrote, and I'm just going to read it to you. Pastor Jim came 6 weeks ago, which was about 5 months after I had the second seizure. At the time Pastor Jim came, I'd only had two seizures. Before he came, I prayed, Lord, I just want to know that I'm going to be okay, because it can be scary when things happen and you don't know why. Sure enough, at some point when Pastor Jim was here, he looked at me and he said, you're going to be okay. And I was so relieved. And I want to give you the same message that he gave me. I want to confidently look at you. I can't look at each one of you because there's quite a few of you. But I want you to know that you are going to be okay, no matter what you're facing. No matter what you're going through, God is not going to miss anything. He is bigger than your problem. And you might kind of wonder, like, how can you say with full confidence that you know I'm going to be okay? Because you don't know what I'm going through. You don't know what I'm facing, and I don't. And one thing God gave me that Monday night is he said, and I've heard this before, it's kind of cliche, but I really understood it. I don't know what your future holds, but I do know who holds your future if you let him. And about five, six weeks ago, God had me put my hands out in front of me.
Sure.
God had me put my hands out like this, and he had me look into my hands, and I saw myself right there in the middle of God's hands. And I just looked at that, and I was like, God, he told me there's nothing that can take you out. Because at this point, I'd only had two seizures. It had been months since I'd had one. But he just had me look in my hands and say, there's nothing that's going to take me out. The only thing that's ever going to take me out is if I choose to get up and walk away, if I choose to quit. So I'm going to have to find my little spot here. So no matter what you're facing, it's not bigger than God. I don't know your future, but I do know who holds your future if you let him. God's hands are the safest place you can be. Nothing can take you out. He will never let you go. The only thing that could ever take you out is if you choose to get up and walk away, if you choose to quit. I want you to know that God's got you. He's not going to drop you. He's not going to get distracted and look away for a second and miss something that happens to you. He sees it all. He knows it all. He doesn't miss a thing. I believe a lot of things that come our way break his heart. I believe that he weeps over us and he weeps with us. Sometimes the things that we have to walk through are just really, really hard. God does not miss those things. He sees it and he is with us through it. He will never leave us or forsake us. He will see us through. It's so important to keep your eyes on Jesus. I've heard this over and over again. Don't focus on the problem. Focus on Jesus, because whatever you focus on is magnified. And in this, I'm choosing to keep my eyes on Jesus, not the problem. I gave my life to the Lord when I was 18 years old. I've been a Christian now for 24 years, and it hasn't been until these past 6 weeks that I've truly grasped and understood the depth of love that God has for me. I've never truly felt him carry me until recently. I've always known that he is good, but knowing and experiencing his goodness are two different things. It's amazing what the Lord is doing in me, and I'm sharing this with you because I know he can do the same for you. During this time, he's been building my confidence. In a time and season where it seems that I would be full of doubt, fear, and questions, God has given me confidence of all things. A deeply rooted trust in him, a deep knowing that he is good, and that he is holding me in his big, strong hands. And this is not to say that I haven't had to take thoughts captive, just like fear. I've had to take some thoughts that have come in and cast them out. I have not dwelt on them, so I'm not perfect. So I do have to battle sometimes, but I just know that there's no safer place that I could be than in God's hands. So embrace the journey. Choose to walk whatever is before you. Be it hard, be it devastating, be it life-altering, don't quit. I won't stop. In life, we often face things we never expected, things that we didn't choose for ourselves, things we could never have imagined happening. In those moments, we have a choice. Will we choose to look up and focus on the one who can turn all things around? Will we give him the glory? Or will we choose to turn inward and shut down and quit and walk away? I want to tell you to walk it out. With God, all things are possible. With God, nothing is impossible. And this is the message God gave me 6 hours before I dropped into the worst seizure that I've had up to now. So this was for me, and I know that is for some of you in here as well. So.
Wow. I hope you don't know. Yeah. As we wrap up, I want to give you the last point, because the reality is that if there's something that's on the throne of our heart, we need to know what it is, identify it. We need to tear it down. But here's the third thing. It's fill our souls with God. Fill our souls with God. So my question to you is, what's on the throne of your heart? Maybe you've given your life to Christ, and you said that Jesus, you're my number one. Let me tell you, the enemy comes in, and it is his plan to seduce you with a lie of something that if you're not careful, you'll give your heart to. What have you given your heart to? Maybe it's something that's not bad at all. I've given my heart to my work so that I can provide for my family. But for some people, that becomes the idol in their life. Maybe you've given your heart to your children. Can I tell you how common it is for parents to make children an idol, that they worship their children, not because they mean to, and it's not like they build an altar before them and bow down and say, you're so wonderful, but because that child or those children, they really are their heart's desire. Their heart is set, their attention, their affection, their devotion is set on their children before anything else. I don't say that condemningly. I say it knowing that the best thing that we can give our children is a heart that's devoted first to God. Because when we are in his hands, we can walk through anything and not be shaken. There's shaking that takes place. We've walked through shaking that's taking place. But we've not fallen, not because we're good, but because God is. What's on the throne of your heart? Maybe this message was for you, because God's calling you to Him to be set apart. He's got a purpose and a plan for you. The shaking is, it comes. Jesus said, don't build your house on the sand, because when the storms come, it's going to be washed away. So funny, Pastor Jim, when he spoke to our teams and our leaders, his message was on multiple storms. And I'm like, thanks, that's a great message, preparing us for multiple storms. And I feel like I've just been slammed with multiple storms. Like, thanks, Pastor Jim, appreciate that. Actually, I do, because then you realize God sees it all and He just wants you in the middle of His hands. Let's bow our heads. Maybe you're here today and you know that this message was for you and that God's calling you to Him and He's calling you to turn from that one thing that you know He's dealing with right now. Maybe you're here and you know beyond a doubt, there's no doubt, a shadow of a doubt in your mind that God is dealing with that one thing. God's calling us to Him today. Maybe you're here, you know what that thing is that's in your heart that you need to get rid of. If that's you, nobody's looking around, but if you're here and you say, Pastor, this message was for me, there's this one thing I know that I've got to deal with. And let me just tell you, if you don't deal with that one thing, it will deal with you. If you're here and you say, this is for me, there's this one thing I know I need to deal with. It's an idol. It's an idol in my life. That's you. Just raise your hand. Say, Pastor, that's me. Thank you. His hands all over. Keep them up. Keep them up. Father, I just pray for those with their hands raised. And they're saying, there's this thing in me that I don't want to put before you. And so, God, I just pray right now that they choose to surrender that to you. They tear down that altar. And just like Gideon went and destroyed the idols that were in that his father had, and the one in the middle of town, that father, that in the middle of their heart, they ripped that thing down. And they choose to allow you by your spirit to come in and fill them. You can put your hands down. Maybe you're here and you need a spiritual rebirth. Maybe you're here and you feel like you're just spiritually kind of like a zombie, like a walking dead person. Like, yeah, I know there's a spiritual life, but I feel like I'm just like this walking spiritually dead person. Jesus has come to bring life. We're body, soul, and spirit. We're born with a body. We have a mind, will, and emotions. But until we give our life to Jesus, until we give our life to Him and we say, I'm yours, we really are spiritual zombies. Jesus said, I come that you may have life and have it to the full. If you don't have a spiritual life, if you've never been spiritually born, then today can be your birthday. It begins with a sincere prayer to Him, recognizing your shortcomings, recognizing your sin, turning from them and giving your life to Him, surrendering to Him, receiving His forgiveness and receiving the life He has for you. If you're here today and you know that today you need a spiritual rebirth, if that's you, raise your hand and say, Pastor, that's me. I know it's me. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else? I see you right here. Back here, I see you. Thank you. Thank you. I see you back here. Over here, I see you. Can we just all pray together? Say, Dear Jesus, I need a spiritual rebirth. I choose you. I turn from my sin. I give my life to you. I receive your cleansing. I receive your forgiveness. I receive you. Wash over me and make me new. In Jesus' name, amen. Can we give those folks a hand? It's pretty awesome. Two things. If you raised your hand, one of two things, or both things. Number one, take a moment, fill out the connection card, let us know what's going on so we can connect you in relationship and resources that can help you grow. The secondly is at the end of our service, every service, our ministry team is up here. They'd love to pray with you. Don't walk out of here if you need prayer. I love y'all. Pastor Chris, you can come. The best is yet to come, guys. God bless.